You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hi, and welcome to the Times Higher Education podcast. I'm Sarah Custer. The team is headed to Doha next week for the Emerging Economies Summit on the 14th to the 16th of January. It's being held in partnership with Qatar University, and they'll be talking about building university impact through resilience and innovation. I had a chance to speak with the president of Qatar University, Hassan Al-Dirham, about some of the topics that are going to be discussed at the summit, like the role of sustainable development goals in the university's agenda. But we also talked about some other stuff, like the trade blockade on the country, the country's reputation for press freedom, and the future for international branch campuses. So the first thing I wanted to ask you was just about the trade and travel ban that's been in place for the past 18 months now in Qatar from Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Egypt, Bahrain, and Yemen. And I'm just wondering, how has that affected Qatar University's research efforts, or your university is consistently ranked very highly for internationalization? How has this affected those activities for you?
Well, it didn't affect, you know, most of our research collaboration with those countries. In fact, it was, you know, a very weak collaboration with these countries. And having said that, most or almost all of those, you know, research projects were funded by Qatar, in fact. So it's vice versa. It hurted their research, institutions and research, centers. So what we did is for because of their, acts, we had to change and to divert our researchers to work with in their collaboration with other, universities or other countries. Rather than what has been done in the past. And this is a pity, in fact, you know, this is something sad, but, it didn't, affected us because the initial funding was almost in all cases from Qatar rather than, dual funding, part of it from here or there. So it didn't, in fact, affected us. It though affected, of course, the transit of people, of researchers, to attend, conferences, scientific conferences, so for our researchers, for, any regional conference, let's say in Dubai or in Riyadh or whatever, now it is not possible for our researchers to go there. Unless through, very, hectic and unbelievable process. So we decided not to attend this, rely more on more, international conferences within the same areas, for this, research, or researchers.
Is this something...
Other than that, it hasn't, really affected us in this regard. It put some pressure, of course, from, administration perspective, at the beginning, to change all the, for example, research teams from, these countries and to identify others from different countries or just continue these research projects without, the participation of blockade research, institutions. But we dealt with this in the first 2 or 3 months, and that's it.
Is this something that is on your horizon whenever you're thinking about future strategizing for the university? Is it a concern of yours?
No, it's. I don't think it will affect us much because to tell you the truth, research funding and research importance in the region is, to tell you the truth, is minimal. And the best that is doing is Qatar in this regard. Qatar strives, in our, national vision 2030, we have created Qatar National Research Strategy, and we would like to move our research funding to equal and productivity to be about 2.8% of the GDP. So it's only Qatar that is taking research seriously as an important element for the development and the sustainability of our economy in the region. Mm-hmm. Other than Qatar, probably it's only the other country is Israel in the region, and probably nowadays Turkey is also moving into the same direction. From the beginning, when we have developed our strategy, our national research strategy, we thought that, of course, that we cannot implement it by ourselves, and we have to work in collaboration with other foreign research centers, institutions, academia, and what have you. And we are focusing more in the West and in the Far East rather than in the region, because, in fact, they are not doing much in this regard.
Would you say that the situation has pushed you to pursue different lines of research that you perhaps wouldn't have done?
No. From the beginning, we developed our research. It's a bit in a way that, our research priorities in Qatar is the same as it is in Bahrain, as in UAE, as in Kuwait, as in Oman, as in of Saudi Arabia. We face similar challenges. And when we developed our national research strategy about 10 years ago, we tried 10 years ago, 8 years ago, to develop some, regional programs with these countries to work on, because we are facing similar challenges, be it for health issues, be it for environmental security issues. But to tell you the truth, we haven't found out that is to have an encouraging from these countries, because as I told you, research is really is not on their agenda as a national country. So we decided, 4 years ago, to work more and to focus more in international collaboration with whether in the West or in the Far East, where we can develop our programs, collaboration in different areas. And since then, we've been working in this regard, and we've been successful, in fact, in such a thing.
Okay. You're hosting the Emerging Economy Summit at Qatar University next week. And one of the sessions at that event is looking at sustainable development goals, and that's going to actually be a real crux for most of the discussions at the event next week at your university. I'd like to hear from you. How have the sustainable development goals, how do they figure into your leadership agenda, if at all?
In fact, sustainable development comes even from our national vision as a country. In Qatar, in fact, sustainable development is a key part of the diversification of our economy, while creating legacy for the future of our generations. For example, some of our infrastructure projects, such as the Mashariq Downtown Doha, is the world's first sustainable downtown regeneration project. The same thing applies for the Lusail City, which is another major infrastructure development. Seriously, for us as a university, we've been a member of within the UN Academic Impact Initiative, and recently engaged in an effort to actively contribute to the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, especially through its collaboration with the UNESCO and the UNESCO office here in Doha, and through also our membership in the International Association of Universities. Okay. So, apart from the natural contribution to the SDG 4 being an academic institution, Qatar University has been selected by international, in fact, we've been selected by the International Association of Universities to serve on the SDG 7 cluster with other universities. And is looking forward to expand our contribution with the, on the other SDG goals.
And
so for example, to ensure access to affordable, reliable, sustainable, and modern energy for all, this is something that we've been engaged with. Probably also to ensure inclusiveness and equality, of equality of education, to promote lifelong learning opportunities. And not only Qatar University, but also at a country level, the government has also taken several initiatives related to sustainable development goals within the country and also at international level.
I'm glad you brought up tackling equality and inclusion in education, because that is something that speaks a little bit to the criticisms that have been alleged against Qatar as a country as a whole, talking about violating international human rights treaties and suppressing press freedom. And I'm just wondering, how do you reconcile that, or how do you respond to those types of criticisms as head of Qatar University?
This has been done through black campaigns against Qatar, but through these blockade countries. In fact, it is the contrary. Qatar in general, Qatar University in specific, the academic freedom that we provide here for our researchers and academics is the highest among the region, probably similar to any other developed countries, especially in Europe or North America. As you know, we have the education city with more than 7 or 8 different branches of universities from the West, especially from the U.S. And for more than 20 years, some of these branches been working now here in Qatar, and they have never suffered such any. For example, complain or pressure put from the government on them to suppress.
Sorry, I'm just going to stop you right there, because there have been complaints about suppression of press freedom, and there have been allegations of human rights violations from other countries.
From whom? From these, for example, branches. For example, we have Georgetown University in Qatar. We have Texas A&M. We have Cornell, Carnegie Mellon. Have you received any complaints from such institutions?
Yeah, I have. I read some. Whenever I was preparing for this interview, I read some complaints about press freedom. Just students who are studying in those branch campuses talking about suppression of press freedom whenever they were studying journalism there.
This is new to me. If it exists, then it is at individual, very few cases, if it happens. For example, here for us at the university, we, assure our, faculty, within a reasonable thing, by the way, when we say also academic freedom, within a responsible degree, because it is also new to the region, by the way, the phenomena or the thing that we are talking about here, academic freedom, this is something also not very, usual. For example, we do not by any means distinguish or make any inequality between either religion or ethnicity or background for our faculty or for our students. In fact, as the blockade, for example, since we were talking earlier about the blockade countries, I'm not sure if you have heard that they have kicked out our students from their countries, and they give them in a very surprised manner 15 days or 2 weeks for them to leave their countries, while on the other way, on the contrary, for us, we sent clear messages for our students and our faculty from those countries that we have at our campus, that they are part of our student body, that they are part of our academic faculty, and they are well respected, and they will stay as as business as usual. Whoever wanted, in fact, this blockade occurred during, you know, just 1 week before the exams, the final exams. It was in, you know, on 5th of June 2017. And that was only 1 week before the exams. So some of the students were concerned about, you know, because they also, these countries, they sent also messages or they declared that for their citizens, they have to leave Qatar within 15 days. So some of them, you know, they approached us and they were really concerned about their future and what will happen to them. And we, you know, assured them that, you know, you are, you know, still part of our, you know, student body and whatever.
Right.
And for the exam, for example, if you would like to take your exams earlier, you can do so, and we will, you know, reschedule your exam so that you feel in a more, you know, comfortable, you know, psychologically more comfortable way.
That's great. I'm glad to hear that. Can we just take it back to what we were talking about earlier, though, about just talking about academic freedom? You had said that it was a relatively new concept for Qatar, and I'm just wondering, how are you?
No, not for Qatar. I'm not saying about Qatar. I'm talking about the region. You know, academic freedom has to do with, you know, with the established, the well-established institutions, the developing of the communities, the local communities, how ready they are, and for democracy. All of this, you know, it is part of all of the, you know, how humans are developed in any region. Otherwise, you know, it will be probably, considered in a negative way.
Let's move on to talking about Education City, because there was UCL in London announced officially that it was going to be ending its branch campus in Qatar. There was also news this month about Reading University has overspent on its Malaysia campus more than was predicted. So I'd like to hear your thoughts about the concept of the international branch campus, and if you think there's a potential risk that the economic sustainability or the economic model of these types of transnational education are perhaps coming to the end, and what does that mean for education hubs like Qatar?
Yes, you know, I was engaged from the beginning, you know, with the negotiation with those branches. To my extent, you know, I was not, you know, fully engaged, but I was aware of what's going on and of, you know, also the, you know, of some of the negotiation, you know, 20 years ago as part of my experience. So the model that we were adopting here and we are adopting in Qatar with these international branches, it's totally different than what's happening in China or in Malaysia or some other countries. It doesn't have to do with the economic sustainability of these branches. In fact, you know, the real cost of any student in our branches does not probably cover I don't have exact figures, but definitely, it's not feasible from economic perspective, economically. So the idea for us here in Qatar is to bring these, you know, elite universities to bring opportunities for all of our youngsters, for our students, for, you know, high quality education, especially for the teenage, you know. For some reason, for social reasons, you know, some families here in Qatar, or most of the families, they would, you know, prevent their, you know, female, you know, students from traveling abroad. So the government has brought these universities to them here, and this is an opportunity for the female especially for the female, to get, you know, a high quality level of education. So that was the aim, you know, and that was part of developing and striving to provide the highest possible education quality for our people here in Qatar, whether it is from K-12 or for high education. The same thing happened for Qatar University. The report that has been done 15 years ago when we started this reform at Qatar University, that was part of, you know, providing high quality education. So most of our programs are accredited by international well recognized, you know, accreditation bodies, based in engineering and business and law and all different health fields and others. Most of our programs are accredited. So the model is totally different. It's not what's happening probably in the Far East. Is more towards, you know, business oriented probably, and the same thing, you know, for these elite universities. In order for them to come here in Qatar, they wouldn't risk their, you know, academic reputation with respect to academic freedom, for example. So this is what I was saying, that, you know, I was part of the negotiation. I know that, you know, part of the conditions that they have put on Qatar is to secure the academic freedom that, you know, the academics and researchers that they are getting in the West to be not less than that here in Qatar once they open.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen this, you know, over the years. With respect to UCL, I think the reason for their, closing down is the less number of students that they can take, because they were doing, I think, master in museum art or something, and I don't think, you know, that program would be sustainable for, you know, we don't have enough students. That was the reason, I think, the main reason for them to shut down.
Okay,
probably.
Well, the official one is that it was just going to, it was a joint decision by UCL and the Qatar Foundation after the after the partnership will end in 2020.
Yeah, but you know, they started their partnership not only about providing a program here in Doha. They have many other, you know, programs that they were working together with Qatar Foundation, you know, in terms of research in different areas, in engineering, in medical, health sciences, and other things, you know, through Qatar Biomedical Research Institute, through other also means. So they will still, I think, continue their, collaboration in many other areas.
You've got some of the world's best experts in higher education and research coming to your campus next week for the summit. What are you most looking forward to?
I think this is an opportunity. This will be a platform for, these higher, educators to discuss challenges, to share experiences, to also to network between these, expertise, and also for the, you know, locals and regions to share such experience and to understand also our issues more from cultural perspective, from, you know, a social perspective, and to provide us also as a university, good feedback, you know, from the expertise. So it will be a good opportunity also for our faculty, some of our students, to participate in such, highly prepared summits. And for such, you know, expertise to see the advancements that Qatar has made through, you know, different fields and sectors.
Well, I hope it's another great summit for you. And I'm sorry I won't be there to listen to the discussions, but I'll be here in London following everything that's going on.
Excellent, excellent.
Thank you very much for your time. I hope it goes well.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Dr. Hassan Alderham, the president of Qatar University. You can follow along with the discussions from the summit with the hashtag #TheEmerging on Twitter. And we'll also be publishing stories throughout the 2.5 days, and there'll be some follow-up coverage. So be sure to check timeshighereducation.com for anything that you might miss. Thanks for listening. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the podcast, do get in touch. sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.